We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What kind of mythical powers does a Sun Devil have? We got to consider that.
It's embarrassing, but we are who we are. We're not a very good team, but we're 3-1 somehow, and we got all the voters fooled, thinking we're pretty good.
Jaworski Lane at 275 pounds showed a heck of a lot of athletic ability.
Welcome to a Monday recap edition of the RotoWire College Football Podcast. The Jeff Smoker of college football podcast. That one was off the top, John. I did not write a player down. Jeff Smoker was just on my mind, as he typically is, I would imagine, sure. For most Big Ten alums. We got a lot to get to this week, I tell you what. And speaking of Jeff Smoker, John, I think we can dive right into Ohio State, Michigan State off the bat here. My goodness. I was looking forward to this one. We called it easily the best game on the slate. I don't think that was wrong. I think we had a reason to believe that. But about 3 minutes into this game, it was very clear that things were going extremely south for Michigan State on the road at Ohio State, 56-7. Honestly, kind of a merciful final score based on what it could have been.
Right. I mean, 49 of those points for Ohio State scored in the first half. Like you said, it was just scorched earth pretty much right from the jump. And we talked about during the week last week just how this was – on paper, kind of a nightmarish matchup for Michigan State, in that they're coming into this game on the road with, you know, what was by the numbers the worst pass defense in college football. And that's not what you want to be bringing to a matchup against a team like Ohio State, where Stroud's playing really well. You got Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, just kind of like the forgotten star of that group, which is crazy to say, and Jackson Smith and Jigba. So, I mean, they just put that thing out of hand, out of question so quickly that, you know, it was just a quick death for Michigan State. There was nothing they could really do. Kenneth Walker got a little bit dinged up during it. So not only was it a tough one on the scoreboard if you're a Michigan State fan, but you also have like your star player get banged up. It was pretty much a worst case scenario for Sparty.
Chris Olave by himself almost outperformed the entire Michigan State passing game. Right? 7 for 140. Olave, Wilson, Smith, and Jigba combined for 24 catches, 371 yards, and 5 touchdowns. And a lot of that, like you said, almost all of it, in fact, came in the first half. I think Stroud was like 29 of 31 with 6 touchdowns at the half. It does seem like Ohio State has one of these games every year, but man, I didn't think Michigan State was going to win this game. We kind of knew there was something in the water with how big this spread was, despite this being a matchup of top seven teams. But man, I thought the Spartans would put up more of a fight than this. This was, if you didn't watch the game, it was as bad, if not worse, than the box score indicates.
Yeah, because one thing that Michigan State couldn't avoid or had to avoid was either like getting a slow start or starting to press if Ohio State did get out to that hot start. So obviously the hot start for Ohio State, not ideal, but it felt like Michigan State knew that like the weight of the world was on them from the jump, like from that first drive or two. Is like, oh boy, like that they kind of had that tight play style where it's like, if we don't score on this drive, we might be sunk. And it just kind of, that kind of nervous energy just sort of permeated through the whole team. I felt like they just kind of crumbled after the first punch from Ohio State. And, you know, again, it was just a total bloodbath out there. It was about as bad as it possibly could have been if you're a Michigan State fan. But I guess to offer some just general perspective, this has been a very good season for Michigan State, all things considered. They seem to have found their coach of the future in Mel Tucker. You know, obviously, talking about that big extension, a lot of jokes were being made during the game on Saturday. But I think that coming into this season, I felt like Michigan State was, you know, maybe the fifth best team in the East, and with the possibility of being the fourth. But they're, you know, they got a chance to finish it strong against Penn State. But I mean, at the same time, even though they had the marquee win over Michigan, it's going to be hard for them to forget about this one.
Yeah, this is the kind of loss that it feels like stains your entire season, right? Where no matter what happens, it's like when it really mattered most and you had a chance to prove you belonged, you were not even remotely in the same class as a truly elite team like Ohio State. Also in the early window, we had Georgia rolling over Charleston Southern. Not much to see there, 56-7.
I didn't see a second of that game. I didn't see a single second of it because I believe it was on like the triple paywalled ESPN package, like the ESPN +++, I think is what you had. And you had to like get like a, what's it, like a VIN or
VPN.
VPN. Yeah, you need a VPN to access it, type of thing. That scan your retina, that type of thing. So I did not have those capabilities at hand. So I saw zero of Georgia's game other than what was getting tweeted out, such as Jordan Davis running in a touchdown. The shameless push for the Heisman continues.
Yeah, I think to access a game like that, you have to prove that like your wife has left you because you've watched too many sports. Like you have to submit documentation, and then they give you access to the vault that can change Georgia and Charleston Southern. I had to get in there to watch some Wisconsin basketball over these last couple of weeks. I'll tell you that they've been relegated to channels that I did not even know existed. But we saw Clemson roll over Wake Forest. Finally, the reemergence of the Clemson offense, putting up 48 points in this one, although still a relatively underwhelming day for DJU, who not that long ago we were talking about as a potential Heisman finalist, and that ship has sailed so far from that. But a nice day on the ground for Clemson. They rack up over 300 yards of rushing on that Wake Forest defense, and you know, still a nice season for Wake, a lot of pluses, but finally seems like they're starting to regress closer to where we thought they'd be.
Yeah, they've kind of run out of steam. I think the offense was always going to be good, and it felt like the defense, I mean, the offense played a little bit above its head, I feel like, at certain times. But the defense was always going to be something that was going to rear its ugly head at some point, obviously giving up a ton of points to North Carolina in that first loss, and then just kind of getting pummeled on the ground against Clemson. And Clemson has, you know, for the amount of fair critiques you can make about DJU and the way this season has gone, they have been really banged up for a lot of the season. I mean, they had to roll a pretty unproven starting three wide receivers on Saturday: Dakari Collins, Bo Collins, and Will Swinney. And then Will Shipley hasn't been healthy for a lot of the season. They've obviously had a ton of just backfield attrition overall, but you get a glimpse now of what Shipley might look like in the future. And, you know, he was kind of comped to Christian McCaffrey a little bit coming out of high school. So a big game from him, I think, portends well for you know, where he'll be in season long drafts and what we can expect from him as a sophomore next year. I think that Clemson can still end this year strong and then, you know, probably bounce back to being a top five type of team next year. This year probably will just go down as one of the bigger anomalies we've seen, but certainly not like the start of the demise of Clemson or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the reports of Clemson's demise may have been a bit premature midway through this season.
I did briefly enjoy them, though.
Oh yeah. Oh, it was fantastic. I mean, there are a lot of people publicly or not who wanted to see Dabo, I think, be knocked down a peg. You know, I'm not saying they wanted him to lose his job and Clemson to just fall back to being an afterthought in the ACC, but you know, nice to take a year off every now and then.
Yeah, I've certainly enjoyed it from where I'm sitting. But I don't think that they're going anywhere. But seeing him squirm a little bit, especially when a lot of the arguments over the years have just been, or I think the genesis of a lot of the Clemson disrespect or disdain is like, well, they have a buy into the playoffs every year because they play in the ACC. And it's like, well, they lose to Pitt, they lose to NC State. You know, it's it goes south in a hurry. Their offense is completely stuck in neutral, that type of thing. But either way, they'll finish out strong. Oh, South Carolina's playing pretty well, so I'm low-key more interested in that game than I ever thought I would be coming into this season. That's a rivalry that's been – one of them is scorching hot, and the other one is a bottom feeder, it feels like, for the last decade or so. South Carolina, early part of the decade, and, of course, Clemson the last 7-8 years.
Yeah, shout-out to the Brinkley twins, of course, anytime South Carolina is brought up. In the Big Ten, we saw Iowa – survive a pretty spirited effort from Illinois, which has been at times looked like one of the worst teams in the country. At other times looked very competitive. Of course, they banked that win over Minnesota a couple weeks ago, but Iowa wins that one 33-23. We saw Notre Dame roll over Georgia Tech. That was 55-0 as Notre Dame keeps some outside hope of somehow slithering its way into the playoff, somewhat alive at least. Alabama 42-45 over Arkansas. Michigan rolled over Maryland. We'll save Wisconsin-Nebraska for the end. That was 35-28 in favor of the Badgers. But of some of those afternoon games I just ran through, where do you want to go next?
I think probably start with Bama-Arkansas. You know, that was a game that had a very similar spread to the Ohio State-Michigan State game. And unlike Michigan State going in as those heavy road dogs, Arkansas took the punches and kept responding. I mean, they gave up some tough touchdowns to, you know, Jameson Williams just kind of running through their entire secondary on his way to the house, that type of stuff. I was surprised because we did talk about this game on Thursday and how I thought that Bama's script would be pretty similar to what we saw against Ole Miss, but no, they really did show a ton of trust in Bryce Young, and he obviously delivered, but this was a close game. And you know, Bama keeps playing these games that are a little bit closer than maybe they should be, whether it was that LSU game a couple weeks back. Obviously, that Florida game looks even more perplexing the further away that we get from that one. Shout out Dan Mullen. But, I don't know what to think of Alabama. I think that basically that they don't have that Bama edge where they have an offense that's basically as good as anybody's else. But their offensive line isn't nearly what it normally is. It's not that dominant type of unit that is keeping the quarterback upright and allows those plays to extend and unfold. We're seeing a lot of pressure get put on Bryce Young, not even on blitzes, that type of stuff. They're not running the ball great, and the defense just obviously isn't all that either. If they're giving up 35 points to Arkansas, Arkansas has a good offense, but you wouldn't expect them necessarily to hang 35 in Tuscaloosa. So Bama keeps winning and everything, but I don't think that they are a flawless team. I think that there are some weak links to this Bama squad that we aren't really accustomed to seeing.
If only there was another loaded team in the SEC just poised to finally knock them off. You know, it's a real shame. It's a real shame. Watching that Alabama game, I saw most of the second half. They remind me of Oklahoma this season. Like that, I feel like I'm watching like 2016 through 2020 Oklahoma with this team, where like the defense, like you said, is just not as dominant as we've become accustomed to. The offensive line, not as dominant as we've been accustomed to. Although they did run the ball pretty well in this game. We saw Robinson get to 122 yards, but needed 27 carries to get there. They had no big plays on the ground whatsoever. They were just getting by with these really big plays through the air. And Jameson Williams had a couple of them. I think it was his first touchdown of the day. Where Bryce Young threw a ball like 45 yards in the air. And at the time that he released it, Williams was like not even remotely open. And that was the throw of the year for me. I think you probably saw it. If you watch any highlights from Saturday, you know the throw I'm talking about where, you know, the ball's kind of right at reaching its apex and Williams just turns on the jets and runs past two defenders and it drops just perfectly in the breadbasket. That was an unbelievable toss for Bryce Young.
Yeah, Bryce Young is silly. So now we're kind of, this is a good probably point to mention, just kind of like I know, and I still think we are fully in our rights to bag on this Heisman race, but it felt like Saturday was the big separator. Yeah, I think it's clearly the Stroud and Young are going to be duking it out over the over this next week or so to get there. And I think that it's Stroud at this stage, but
he's the heavy favorite right now. If you're looking at updated odds, you know, these came on Sunday morning. He's listed at -220 and Bryce Young is at +175 in the book I'm looking at. I mean, I don't even know why you bother bringing any other finalists at this point. I don't think there's anyone else who can really work their way into it, having a legitimate case. And I know some years they bring like three guys. Sometimes they brought five or six. You could probably get away with just bringing those two to New York.
I would like a token Jordan Davis one, especially if the race is this sort of decided. I mean, if Julius Peppers can get there, or
Manti Te'o got there.
Yeah. So, we'll
Georgia deserves some representation.
I think so, man. I think he's been the most impactful player that they've had this season. So it'd be nice to see. I'm of course kind of tongue in cheek about it, but we've seen other years where people go absolutely ballistic for, you know, name a defensive player on Bama or something. This guy needs to be in New York. So why not?
Right. It would actually be pretty funny if they sent Stetson Bennett, and then when they showed the voting results, he had like zero first place votes, zero second place votes, zero third place votes, and it was just there as a representation for how good Georgia's been.
a little proxy, a little stand-in.
Shut out of the vote. I don't know. Thanks, I can see that. I think Desmond Ridder, I feel like Ritter's going to be there as just like, especially if Cincinnati does win out. I think he's there as just like, we needed someone else, and you know you have no chance, but you know people know who you are, and we can't just have two guys showing up.
That's certainly possible, especially if they finish the drill undefeated. And I meant Jabril Peppers, not Julius Peppers.
Yeah.
So that my mistake there. You know, hand up.
I knew what you meant. I honestly wouldn't be shocked if Julius Peppers was there too. I thought maybe you knew something I didn't know.
He probably deserved it. I mean, that guy was insane, but I don't know. I flew this morning, so my brain's all foggy.
Speaking of dark horse Heisman candidates, Braylon Allen, 22 carries, 228 yards, three more touchdowns in Wisconsin's 35-28 win over Nebraska. Of course, we won't dwell on this one too much, not a ton of national implications here, but the Wisconsin offense starting to look much more like a traditional Wisconsin offense built around a dominant running back. I think Graham Mertz has had his two best games of the year back-to-back. And when you look at the final box score here, he's 12 of 18 for 145 and a touchdown, not exactly lighting it up, but if nothing else, that speaks to just how bad he was through those first 5 or 6 weeks of the year. He's at least reached the point now where he's completing like the basic 8 yard out, or, you know, hitting a guy in the hands on a slant, which for a Wisconsin quarterback, that's really all you can ask for.
Yeah. No, I mean, that it's marked improvement over where it was. I mean, I think we were rightfully questioning whether Mertz was the guy earlier this season when the struggles hit in late September, or really, I guess, from the jump, honestly. But
they hit right away. Hard.
Yeah, Wisconsin is rolling right now. I think that obviously the three losses is going to kind of sandbag their overall ceiling. But I don't know if there's more than five or six teams that are actually playing better football than Wisconsin right now. SP Plus loves the Badgers right now and what they've been doing. So I want to, in a truth serum situation, Nick, say Ohio State wins this weekend and Wisconsin wins as well, and they meet in the Big Ten championship yet again. Do you think that Wisconsin might have like that type of team that just kind of uglies it up for Ohio State, and you give the Badgers a shot in that one?
No, not at all. Fair. 0%.
All right.
Not a chance in the world. No.
Okay. All right. Nope. Just I wanted to toss that out there in out of respect for how well Wisconsin's been playing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I just don't want there to be any confusion. This team is still not good. They're nowhere near as good as Ohio State. And more than anything, I don't want to even entertain the thought of Wisconsin potentially pulling that upset and kind of get myself in that mood that it could actually happen. So, you know, we're on to Minnesota. We got to focus on the week ahead. Just get there, you know, at least salvage like kind of a fun season. But if we lose to Minnesota, it's off the table. So, you know, you got to focus on what's in front of you.
That's true. Yeah, that you need the axe needs to be in Madison. Like there's mm-hmm. really no ifs, ands, or buts about that.
Right. Cincinnati 48, SMU 14. You know, I mean, it's hard to look at this as like a fantastic win for Cincinnati. But SMU 8-2 coming into this game. You know, one of the more formidable opponents that they're going to face in that conference schedule. Desmond Ridder, another nice game in his final home game for Cincinnati. 17 completions, 3 touchdowns, almost 275 yards. Any takeaways here? I think if anything else, it was just nice to see Cincinnati, you know, finally roll a team after 3 or 4 close ones.
Right. And I, for my money, I thought SMU was pretty clearly the second best team in the American coming into this one. And I thought that the offense specifically for SMU would give, you know, at least a little bit of trouble to Cincinnati. The most interesting matchup to me coming into this one that, that could have swayed this one way or the other, was Cincinnati's passing defense against SMU's passing offense, because SMU, obviously with Tanner Mordecai back there, you know, challenging for 40 touchdowns coming into this one, to hold him to 66 passing yards on 26 pass attempts is unbelievable. That is a crazy performance from Sauce Gardner and the guys for Cincinnati. So that's a legit defense right there. Like, that's a defense that can keep a lid on, or at least compete with a lot of these offenses that you know, theoretically they will be. Obviously, you would defer to a Bama or an Ohio State against them in a given matchup, but there are no pushovers. I don't think that there are a lot of teams out there that can hold SMU to 66 yards through the air. That was a shocking result. And then Jerome Ford came back. He didn't look great necessarily, just 4.1 yards per carry, but you know, found the end zone once again. He's going to be key to their chances moving forward here. So they got another game coming up, I believe, against East Carolina this weekend. They should be able to take care of business pretty easily there. And then, you know, finish it out, AAC championship game. Houston's respectable. They're getting the rankings respect from the committee and everything. So, you know, things are setting up pretty decently now for Cincinnati, especially since, here's a segue, Oregon.
Woo. Transition of the year from John McKechnie.
Look at that.
38-7, a resounding loss for the Oregon Ducks, officially out of contention after sitting in the proverbial catbird seat heading into this week. I got so excited to say catbird seat, I couldn't even pronounce it.
It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, a pretty massive blown opportunity here for Oregon, not only to lose this game on the road, but to lose it like they did. To a team wearing really weird gray uniforms. Wasn't a big fan of those. The helmets, I'm told,
they look like airplanes.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. They look like people to me. I didn't really get the airplane vibe. I don't like when a team, like, there's no gray in their uniform, you know. And obviously Oregon's been guilty of fudging the rules on uniforms as much as anyone. So I don't want to think I'm giving them a pass, but I don't know where that came from. I didn't love it. But either way, it got Utah the win, 38-7. So the number one team, I think, in the way of Cincinnati now topples. The question to me is, Oklahoma State, you know, shuts out Texas Tech 23-0 in Lubbock. If Oklahoma State beats Oklahoma and then wins the Big 12 title game, does one loss Oklahoma State now essentially replace that spot that Oregon was kind of the placeholder for, and potentially jump Cincinnati, which at this point really kind of controls its own destiny in some way, but at the same time, it also doesn't, because it's not going to have another opportunity at a signature win like a team like Oklahoma State will.
Right. Yeah. And Oklahoma State, I'm sure, is happy that OU found a way to scratch out a victory against Iowa State. That one got pretty close, pretty hairy there towards the end. But yeah, Oklahoma State, as far as their resume is concerned, it's strong. I mean, not only do you beat Boise State in your first, like, real game of the season, but you beat Kansas State, you beat Texas, you beat Baylor, you know, and you do a lot of these wins in pretty dominating fashion. I mean, a lot of times holding teams to under 10 points, and certainly fewer than 20 a lot of the time. So Oklahoma State is impressive. I feel like that's been the team that had the strongest resume that wasn't getting a lot of respect, at least through these first couple rounds of playoff rankings. But I think the committee now has to acknowledge them. So I think that they might actually be the most interesting team when the new set of rankings is released on Tuesday. I'm really, really interested to see where they end up checking in. Like, what would they be ahead of Michigan right now? Like, I kind of doubt it, but you know, we'll see. And yeah, that's kind of it. So we've got I imagine that Ohio State will take Michigan out of the running this weekend. So I think that the spots 3 through 5 are going to be fascinating to see how they unfold, whether it is Oklahoma State Cincinnati, Notre Dame, I think with the way that they've been playing of late, not that Georgia Tech is a good team, but they did exactly what you should do to a bad team on Saturday. So between those three, I have a hard time kind of differentiating between the three, and I'm very interested to see what the committee does now that one of those proverbial dominoes in front of Cincinnati is now out.
Right. I mean, Oklahoma sitting at 10-1, still somewhat in this thing, right? I mean, if they were to beat Oklahoma State and then win the Big 12 title game, that could potentially still be on the table. At Notre Dame, not out of it. If Cincinnati were to trip up, I think they would essentially need that domino to fall. My one lingering question, I guess, about Cincinnati is there a scenario in which Michigan pulls the upset against Ohio State? They're currently 8-point dogs heading into that game on Saturday. You know, let's say Michigan wins it on a last second field goal. Is there any world in which Michigan then gets in, you know, goes to the Big Ten title game, presumably wins that, and then two-loss Ohio State would jump an undefeated Cincinnati? Is that in the realm of possibility?
Ooh, so it would be a non-Alabama two-loss team. I mean, right. I already
and a
think
non-conference
that,
champion.
Yeah, right. I mean, we've seen non-con champs make the playoff before. I mean, Alabama did it the year that they beat Georgia and everything. So, I mean, it's not unheard of, but we haven't seen it with a two-loss team yet. So, yeah, we're kind of entering new ground here in what's going to be one of the last four-team playoffs that we'll see before the expansion. So, I feel like they probably would, actually. And then that kind of reifies it in my head that a two-loss Bama probably gets in over Cincinnati too. That I hate saying that out loud, but in my heart of hearts, I think that like the committee, I think that they want to be fair, but they also want at the end of the day to set up the two most competitive matchups and the most competitive four teams. And I think it's probably realistic to say, even if Ohio State were to lose a second game, that they are one of the four best teams in college football, and likely the same can be said of Alabama, unfortunately. So resume should matter and everything, but I think there is like an element of just like a common sense that needs to come in here, where it's like Ohio State would be favored by probably three touchdowns against Cincinnati on a neutral field, you know?
All right, let's finish this thing out. A little DFS recap from this past weekend. I know you have the winning lineup handy. How did you do? Who went off? Who disappointed?
Yeah, so I did pretty well. It was a really, really high bar to clear this week. Like we talked about it. It was a 14 game main slate with a lot of really crazy totals. And it was really interesting because I forget if I had figured this out before or after we recorded on Thursday, but Boston College's quarterback, Phil Jurkovec, was min price for a quarterback. So that made him 51% rostered in this big tournament over on DraftKings. So it was like the perfect test of whether that fading him was going to work or not, because I mean, that it's literally about as even of a split as you're possibly going to get. Jurkovec ended up doing fine, especially for 4,500. Gave you a ton of flexibility to do a lot of stuff with the rest of your lineup. I think you absolutely had to have CJ Stroud on Saturday, or you were behind the field. I think you also, because it was possible and because it clicked so well, you needed to have both Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. If you had Smith and Jigba, he didn't do quite as well as those guys, and he cost you probably about $1,000 more against your salary cap. So the key was then going and getting Jordan Addison, who was the other guy over 7K, who really, really impressed on Saturday, obviously from Pitt. But the guy that really changed the slate was Milton Wright. And that I believe, was the key to this winning lineup. He had the right pairing of going AOC, our guy, 31 DraftKings points, 423 passing yards, three touchdowns, all of them going to Milton Wright, who was just 3.6 percent rostered in Saturday's tournament, just 3,900. So he was obviously someone that by the end of it, with 50.3 DraftKings points, unbelievable performance from him. So him, Addison, Olave, and Wilson were really the keys there. So it was a good day to hunt value at running back and to go heavy at receiver, and then you find the one value receiver, obviously, in Wright, and that crushes to kind of an untold degree. I mean, going like almost 20x value or over 10x value for sure. That's pretty unbelievable returns. And then Letty Brown, who we talked about, he was kind of chalky, 40% owned, but he went for 28.2 DraftKings points. So he did extremely well in his own right. I got let down by my guy Dylan Goffney, as I mentioned, with SMU having a total of 66 yards through the air. That's not going to get it done for my guy Goffney. So he was blanked. That kind of sunk things because everyone else was fire emojis on my lineups. I had Kyren Williams in my best lineup, Chris Olave, CJ Stroud, of course. Izzy Abanaconda from Pitt didn't do quite as well. I think he might have gotten dinged up or something. He only ended up with 19 rushing yards. So I forget if he was a little bit dinged in the second half there for Pitt and what was a really, really fun game with them and Virginia. But yeah, it was another really fun week and a really high scoring. Like, there was a very high bar to clear if you were going to end up cashing consistently on Saturday. And as I mentioned earlier, Will Shipley did great, and Bo Collins also did great from the Clemson side of things.
All right, that was a great recap, dude. Week 13, now ahead of us. Big games all around. I will obviously have my eye on Wisconsin-Minnesota, a game that I have traditionally enjoyed, but this year I'm kind of dreading just the possibility of an upset. I just hate PJ Fleck so much. It would really mean a lot to get that win, but man, Oklahoma State, that's the night game on Saturday. That's going to be a great one. We get Alabama-Auburn in the Iron Bowl. We get Penn State-Michigan State, which, like you said at the top, you know, maybe not as fun as it seemed like it might be, but still a really good game. And for some reason, yet again, I know this is usually the case, but Ohio State-Michigan, 11 a.m. kickoff Central Time. At least for you, that's noon in the Eastern time zone. But I tell you what, that's a little early. I'm going to say it. That's a little early for me.
Yeah, it is, especially when it's disorienting when it's a game of that type of stakes and it's the first game of the day on Saturday. But I don't remember the last time it was any time other than that time slot. I don't know if that's like a traditional thing that the schools have agreed upon one way or the other, but it feels like that game, it would be cool to see that game get like the nighttime primetime slot as opposed to noon. But the getting it started between those two is also fun in its own right. You need a good spine of games the rest of the day to carry you through, you know, because you are kind of not getting the best game of the day out of the way right off the top.
Absolutely. All right, man, enjoy it. Enjoy the Thanksgiving holiday. I know you're traveling already. I'll be doing some traveling later this week, but full week ahead and looking forward to breaking it all down.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.